This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hi, this is Marina Sirtis, Deanna Troi from Star Trek The Next Generation. You're listening to Trek FM.
Theo Greyhawk.
It's time for another serving of Earl Grey. I'm Philip Gilfus, sitting in the Senate seat, and I'm joined at the aft science station by Lieutenant Darren Moser, Chief Executive Officer of Radishes, Spores, and Mushrooms Research. Darren, how goes your studies?
You know, my collection of Mord's funguses and spores is doing really well. The radish drive, let me tell you, Philip, it is the future. It actually goes really slow, but the gear ratio is amazing. So I think 20, 30 years tops, we're going to have a working prototype. Just you wait.
And it tastes terrible.
The irony of Mr. Broccoli working on the radish drive, I appreciate. I'm also joined by Assistant Tactical Officer Ensign Daniel Prue. Now, Daniel, I hear you're installing some retro holographic emitters into our communications arrays. You know, I'm looking forward to all those people we hail just popping out at us.
Yeah, it's tough, though. I'm working on the sit subroutine so that the people that you're chatting with can become comfortable no matter where they are. It's tough, but we're working really hard on it. So,
and we have a very comfortable bridge. I mean, we want people to be able to sit down.
Oh, so. Of course. Absolutely.
Yes. Well, as you can probably tell from that opening, we're going to be talking about the origins of Star Trek Discovery in The Next Generation. We have a lot of good stuff.
Philip, wait. I don't think we host this show anymore.
Wait, what?
I think when we spore shifted, we actually ended up in Earl Grey, but now our new communications, we're transmitting from City Alpha 3. We're still stranded. Maybe this is a holographic representation. I don't know. But you can listen to us talking about Star Trek every week on City Alpha 3 as we transmit. No one's responding to our hails, Philip. No one's responding.
Yeah. This isn't us anymore. I think we're just around. I think we just showed up here because, well, coincidentally, as it may be, this is 200 episodes of Earl Grey.
200 episodes. Oh, my goodness.
200 episodes. Wow. That's right. And it's a big celebration for Trek FM and Earl Grey.
Definitely.
And all things Star Trek Next Generation. So, listeners, we want to return you to your regular host. And so, have a happy 200 servings of Earl Grey. Make it so.
Engage.
Live long and prosper.
Well, thank you, guys. As you guys just heard, the original crew of Earl Grey, Philip, Daniel, and Darren for their introduction to our 200th episode of Earl Grey. Yay!
Yay! We are literally sitting on the shoulders of giants. And again, just love the original crew of Earl Grey. Just to put it out there again, I found Trek FM because of them, and just so happy to be here hosting now. So thanks, guys. I'm so excited for episode 200.
Well, as you heard, you just heard Amy.
Yes,
I'm your host,
guys.
Richard Marquez. And joining me is, as always, the lovely Amy Nelson. Hello, Amy.
Hello. I just really can't believe 200 episodes. That is so much work. And we've only done... I've only done around 50.
Well, Amy and I have done 30-something.
Yeah. So, and to do that many and to have Earl Grey be 200 episodes old is awesome.
Awesome. And also joining with us is also the amazing Justin Ozer. How you doing, Justin?
I'm doing great. Great to be here with you guys again.
He's the newbie.
Yeah, you guys have been here for, you know, 30, 40 something episodes, and I've been here for like 10. But
you know what? You make a good impact, and we love you for it.
Oh, absolutely, thank you. Yes.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's great to be here celebrating episode 200 of Earl Grey. And yeah, of course, there's no way we could be here without Philip, Daniel, and Darren. So thank them so much for their contribution and coming in to do a little special intro for us for this episode.
So today what we're going to be doing is, for our 200th episode of Earl Grey, we decided to talk about the 200th episode of Star Trek production, the fourth season episode Cupid.
So what does that mean, 200? Because it's not the 200th episode of Next Generation.
It's not, but I can explain because I've got to look this up. So, so basically, if you look at the episodes of the original series, there was 80, including The Cage. There was 22 episodes of the animated series. This also counts the movies. So by this point, there was, I want to say, 5 movies. And then add to that the number of TNG episodes there had been up to that point. It came to 200, totaling everything in Star Trek, all the episodes and all the movies. So that's how we come to that. Yeah, unfortunately, Next Generation didn't last for 200 episodes, so we couldn't do that. But we could say the 200th Star Trek production was a Next Generation episode.
So we're sneaking it in there. Yeah.
It works.
Right underneath the way.
It works.
It works. You know, it's 200th and we're celebrating our 200th, so why not?
Yeah, and it's a fun episode.
It is a fun episode. And actually, I was surprised that this one, you know, landed right on the 200th. Because, I mean, I've heard, obviously, lots of positive things and also negative. Because, you know, it is what it is.
Everyone so. Loves one, and there's always someone who doesn't like it. So, yep.
Right. Right. So for those of you that don't know what this episode is, so obviously this is season 4, episode 20, and basically it's a Q story. That's all it really is. That's all you need to know. I mean, that's it. No.
Or you could say it's a Q and Vosh story.
It is no, a Q and Vosh Q. story.
Okay.
Someone doesn't like Vosh. but like, so anyway, so just to let you guys know, so Q picks up on a romantic tensions between Captain Picard and his old flame, Vosh, or should we just say the woman that shall not be named?
Yes. Because Picard never says her name to anyone else, so I think it is fitting.
No, I thought after Ro and Riker, Ro was the woman who shall not be named.
Yeah. Well, I have right. many women that shall not be named. I'm sorry. I'm a right, little right, protective let me, of my crew there.
Let me get through this. So what happens is that obviously Q picks that up and he transport them, Q, the entire crew and also Vosh and also Q transported them into the world of Robin Hood. So basically the old time story of Robin Hood saving Maid Marian. So that's basically what it is. And what were your guys' first impressions? I'm going to start with Justin.
Well, the first time I saw this episode, so I think there had been a Q episode since Deja Q in season 3. And it's kind of a nice follow-up because it's a callback to Q had lost his powers and had to kind of struggle through. And that's a hilarious episode. Now he has his powers back. He wants to give Picard some kind of gift. Picard's really irritated by all of that. It's kind of a fun episode all around. I think as I said in a previous episode, I'm not the biggest fan of Vosh, but I actually like her more here than in Captain's Holiday. I feel a little more sympathetic to her because what's really crazy is that like it's a really funny episode, but at the same time, there are times when Q's like sitting back, like having something to eat while he watches, you know, Picard and the crew fight for their lives. Like he's amused by them having this danger and almost dying, you know? So it's a little weird in that way, but I enjoy it. It's kind of a fun take on Robin Hood. And yeah, I think it's fun overall, and rewatching it, I enjoyed it again.
You know, actually I was rewatching this episode today, and I was talking to when Jennifer and I were both watching it, and I was like telling her, I was like, yeah, I've been to Sherwood Forest and I've been to Nottingham Castle. And I was like, it's nothing like that. You know, because like I remember when this was like, oh man, early 1990s sometime. And we were we went up there as a family trip and everything, you know. And at that time, I think Robin Hood, the one with Kevin Costner.
Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Yeah, that actually came out a couple months after this episode. And I think that's one of the reasons why they did it.
Did it really? Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah. Right on. Well, like we've seen that movie several times, and my sister and I and my dad were all watched it, and you know, thinking that it was gonna be this huge forest, you know, and you know where you could hide and everything, and nope. it's like they hid in this and they couldn't find them, really. But obviously, you know, it's a little bit more urbanized than it is today, because we're kind of disappointed with it. But then again, we're kids, so not realizing the you know, farms and urbanization and all that kind of stuff really took out most of the forest. So but yeah, back in those days, I'm sure it was heavily forested.
Yeah, well, and here you get a setting that's very much like what you might find in Southern California for, you know, different trees and brush.
You're ruining the illusion, man. Anyway, what'd you think, Amy?
Well, I think it's a very fun, lighthearted episode. And when you look at season four, like, this is, you know, next gen, just firing on all cylinders. Many, many people love season four. And as I was looking at the episodes that came just before Cupid, I mean, First Contact, Galaxy's Child, Night Terrors, Identity Crisis, The Nth Degree. I mean, these are all pretty heavy topics. And then we get Cupid. And I think it's just a breath of fresh air. It's very light. It's not too heavy. I mean, there are a couple things that we'll talk about, you know, later. But as far as my initial thoughts, man, it just is so fun. And to see them, I mean, we always love, this is like a holodeck episode, but not in the holodeck, right? Because now they're in Sherwood Forest, but they get to dress up and they're in a different, you know, atmosphere and environment. And you can see, I think, that the characters or the actors really enjoy that as well, because they seem to be lighter and stuff like that. So it's just a super fun episode, you know, in the midst of such heavy topics to be discussed. And the one after Cupid is the Drumhead, you know, and that's another heavy, you know, episode. So I think I love Cupid, and it's just fun to pop in to watch. It's really fun.
I'm kind of curious about something. You were talking about it not being on the holodeck, and I hadn't thought about this. Like, where does Q actually send them? Because I don't think he's sending them back in like Earth history, because it's kind of a fictionalized story that maybe is based on a little grain of truth. But like, where is he sending them?
Well, when they get sent, Picard says, well, this is Q sending us to his idea of what Sherwood Forest is. So in my mind, in the episode when we first meet Q, where they send them to with Tasha Yar, do you remember the name?
Yeah, to the courtroom area. This is an encounter.
No, where they go to the battle with the pig.
Oh, you're
people.
Talking about Hyde and Q, I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's sort of just this, you know, made up place where Q sent them. And so in my mind, I'm thinking, well, this is just another place where Q sent them, and it's just completely confined in Q's, because it's not going to affect any timeline. It's not going to affect any other culture. This is just a Q place where he's putting them.
Like a little holodeck or room inside the Q continuum or something?
Yes.
Okay.
I like
or
that.
Like a little box or something like that.
Yeah. Here maybe like day, maybe like a like a little cube, like Moriarty. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
See, it all comes around in Star Trek.
Yeah. There you go. It comes around. Awesome. Well, I mean, I actually like this episode. I mean, it's not one of my, you know, go-to ones. I mean, I haven't seen this episode. It's been a while since I've seen this episode. But I mean, as soon as we just started discussing that we're going to actually discuss this one, it's a really fun, very fun episode to watch. Jennifer loved it. so she loves some of the humor, and I'm like, no, look, he's gonna smash the thing. and I love that part, and we'll discuss that later, but like, oh my gosh, it was lots of quotes that you can definitely come out of this. And and you know, we discussed a lot about Vash, and one of the things that, you know, I was thinking when I was watching the episode, and how we've discussed how Picard and, let's say, what is that astrometric officer? What was her name?
Nella Dern.
Nella Dern.
Is that her screen name as well?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
Her name is Nella Dern, Commander Nella Dern.
Oh, there you go. Okay, so there we go. But, like, you know, I was thinking about their relationship, Vash's relationship with Picard, and why it didn't work with Vash. And I firmly believe that it's because of Q. I mean, she's obviously an archaeologist at heart, but at the same time, she's out there for profit to sell all these artifacts. Now, whether or not she wants to put it in a museum or not, or want to make platinum or something like that, I just think that that was one of the things that that was probably the main reason why Vash and Picard did not end up together like they could have after Captain's Holiday. But clearly, he didn't talk about her to the rest of the crew. What do you guys think?
I think it didn't work out, and I think Q has nothing to do with it. And I think Picard sums it up perfectly when at the end of the episode, Vash tells Picard, "Well, I'm going to go off with Q." And he's like, "What? Why would you do that? Q is so unreliable, inconsistent, just so selfish." And, you know, and he lists all these attributes that is Q. And then she says, "Remind you of anyone?" And it's like, oh, yeah. Okay, so now Picard's realizing, yeah, it is a great fit for Q because they are so similar. And that's why it would never have worked, even if Picard was trying to fool himself and, you know, trying to make it work. It just never would have worked. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think Picard has a certain fascination, but there's all of these things that he finds that she's in it for herself. She's in it for profit. She's going to, you know, take what she can from archaeological sites. And I don't think it would work. Now, out of curiosity, Amy, have you seen the Deep Space Nine episode that has Q and Vash? I don't think you have.
Oh, gosh.
Anyway, it's not the best episode, but it's a follow-up.
Didn't they show up on Voyager?
Not Vash, but Q.
Oh,
not
Vash, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Just Q and his son and, I guess, spouse. Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? That's funny you mentioned that because I actually just watched that episode. Yeah.
But anyway, I can definitely see it. Q and Vash are a better match because they like to make mischief and it's fun to have some power and do some stuff, right? That's kind of their thing.
Yeah, I thought, you know, comparing to their relationship in Captain's Holiday versus this one, yeah, I think you're right. Captain Picard has a curiosity about her and that, you know, I mean, some people say opposites attract, and we are seeing that for sure with these two characters. I love the interplay when Vash is, you know, eating breakfast after obviously spending the night with Jean-Luc, as she continues to call him, and that sort of rubs me the wrong way. And then Beverly's like, "Oh, we usually have breakfast." And then Beverly just comes right in, starts drinking her tea with them. That is so great. And so I think that, like with Vash, they don't really know her, and Picard is not willing to talk about her. And I think she gets that realization. And so throughout the episode, she seems more distant and pulled back because she realizes that Picard never has mentioned her to anyone, especially to Counselor Troy. She's like, "Well, aren't you supposed to counsel him? Isn't he supposed to talk to you?" You know? So I like Vash better here in this one because she's not so, She's just more distant, I think, with it.
I think this is the last time we see her, don't we?
This is the last time we see her in TNG.
In TNG, yeah. Right. That's what I meant.
It is. And I'm always surprised by that. You know, I watched this episode and I'm like, really? She was only there twice? I thought she was there more. But yeah, just this and Captain's Holiday, and that's it for her on TNG. Again, one appearance on DS9, but...
It's not like she sees Picard in DS9 anyway. She talks about him, but yeah, that's really about it. Yeah.
I mean, and her character, you would think, as I think about this a little more, she is very commanding. And when she comes into a room, like, she owns the room.
Nobody's going to ignore her, right?
Yeah. And she comes to the bridge and, oh, is this where John Luke sits? You know, I mean, just no hesitation. She's going. And so I can see why Picard would, you know, find that attractive, because, you know, he would want a strong woman in his life.
Well, when you're a smuggler, you kind of have to be.
Have to be strong.
Especially when you're stealing artifacts and stuff like that. You kind of have to be.
Well, but I mean, you could be a smuggler and play your cards as no one's going to remember me. But I think with Vash, everyone remembers her.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're looking for an opening or something like that, especially when you're trying to probe for weaknesses, I mean, this will be a tangent, but this is Star Wars. I mean, let's talk about, you know, Han Solo is very, very suave and everything, and asks a lot of questions as well, and he's very commanding as well. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah, I don't know. That's to me, that's a classic trait. But, yeah. Yeah. Not that I know smugglers.
But continuing with Vash, like, it's, and I like her in this episode better than Captain's Holiday, because we do get to see her interaction with almost everyone of the crew, because, you know, first it's with Beverly, well, obviously with Picard, but, you know, when Beverly joins him for breakfast, and then Beverly starts showing around the ship. And so you get to see them one-on-one with each other. That's classic. I mean, it's so, so good. And then Beverly gets called to sick bay. And so there's Riker. And so we get to see Riker and Vash one-on-one.
Oh, and do you notice, like, as soon as Vash comes in, Riker gets his slowly spreading smile. Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah, for sure. And so we get to see Vash, obviously, with Counselor Troy. And so we get to see Vash interacting with way more of the crew than we ever saw in Captain's Holiday. And I think, do you remember the actress's name? I just saw it in my head and I can't.
Jennifer Hetrick, is it? Yeah, Jennifer Hetrick, it is.
Yeah. And and her acting in this one, just to me, is really just spot on. And I like seeing the interplay that she has with the different crew members.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that as well. And you get to see more of her personality because, yeah, for Captain's Holiday, Picard interacts with her, and so do, you know, the people on Risa with all their schemes and stuff. But the rest of the crew has no idea. They haven't even heard of her until this episode. So it's really great to see that. And you get to see more of her character and her interactions. And it seemed like in Captain's Holiday, she was this person that was just kind of ruthless and out for herself. But here, she has kind of some bruised feelings that Picard didn't tell people about her. So you see this other side makes you more sympathetic toward her, that she has some, you know, feelings and wants to people to know that she means something to someone, you know?
Yeah, she's more vulnerable and therefore relatable.
So on the other side of that, and here's how I'm saying it. You know, I live a very private life and I don't tell anyone everything, you know. And I just think that it just shows Picard is more of it shows how very private he is. I mean, not saying that everyone in his crew it doesn't know anything about in his life, like, you know, obviously the Borg and everything, and he gets did it happen? No. Anyway, but like, you know, it just shows really how private Picard is. And I mean, I guess.
Do you think if it was Kirk and Vash that everyone on the ship would have known about it? I mean, do you think like with a different captain, it would be different, or is it just has something to do with the position of being a Starfleet captain?
I think it has something to do with the Starfleet captain, because it really, I don't know, I don't think we really saw that in the original series, yeah. the, I mean, obviously he has romantic relationships, but you never see that interplay between the two about, or between the crew and him, really about the previous relationships, unless it comes
unless it's
out
something,
obviously with
unless them. It's a person that's actually on the ship, right?
Right, exactly. And it's like, and I was just thinking about that. I think it has to do with more of a commander, you know, you don't want to leave yourself vulnerable. But I mean, I guess at the same time, when you've been together that long, I guess it kind of has to happen and it unfolds in your personal relationship, or your personal relationship is going to mesh in with your professional, especially when, you know, you really can't have one, especially on a starship.
Yeah, well, she definitely heard that time and time again. Well, you know, Captain Card is a very, oh, I know, a private man.
Well, he's not so private when Q's around, right? I mean, he's always intruding on their little private moments and just coming out of the start or coming out of the bulkhead and just looking at everything.
Yeah, Q is, he's kind of a little peeping Tom, isn't he?
Right? A little creepy.
Yeah. They're like, aren't you going to kiss her goodbye? And then he pops in as like, oh, I forgot my hat. Really?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's that part. But then there's a part where his head is poking through the bulkhead. Is that when he's checking in? Is it on Picard or is it on Vosh?
Well, it's Vosh's quarters. So
Vosh's quarters. Like, ugh.
Yeah.
He's pretty creepy at some points in here.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, we get to see Q again in Picard's quarters when he's sleeping.
This is the first time that
and he's like right there, right in his bed, you know, right there.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of his quarters, you would think that they would have drapes over their windows or something like that, or some kind of privacy. Because I
you'd think so, because there could be a ship passing by and
someone could see in those tiny little windows.
No, I'm serious, because that's exactly what it was a Voyager episode, and they were talking about, why don't you put drapes, you know, in case we pull into a busy starport that no one can see and see.
The little things that like blinds that come down, or is that Voyager?
Like, I don't think any starship has
down
one.
And then it goes up.
Maybe you're thinking of Enterprise, because I don't remember drapes or anything like that.
Okay.
I don't think so, but there is a Voyager episode where they're going through a void in space, in the episode Night, I think it is, where they talk about, you know, it'd be nice to put up some drapes, but I don't think they do, because they're just so distracted by there being like nothing outside the window.
Right. And I guess, you know, 90% of the time you're not going to worry about that. But those one times where someone could be like, binoculars and everything.
Yeah, I don't know. You're I don't know, in space dock, or, you know, docked at a station and there's another ship that's over here. Maybe they could see. I don't know. Who knows?
Maybe. I don't know. But I mean, that's creepy enough as is. So, speaking of being creepy, let's talk about Q. he says that Q says that he wants to repay a debt to Picard, obviously, for helping him out when he was casted out from the Q Continuum. But like, he's endangering everyone's lives, and is he funny or is he menacing in this episode?
See, I think he's pretty funny and also menacing, but a question came up in my mind, like, really, would he really have let anybody be executed or killed? Was that really at stake? I don't know. He makes it seem like it and the crew believes it, but I don't know if he really would have done that. Like, oh, well, I guess, you know, Picard and Vosh are going to get their head chopped off. Would he have gone through that with that?
No, it wouldn't be fun.
Then his fun would end. Like, Picard, the most fun he could possibly have would be dead.
I mean, he plucked, you know, well, obviously it hasn't happened yet, but he plucked him from death. I mean, so he could replace his heart. Well, not replace his heart, but he still, I mean, he probably had something to do with him surviving on the table when he gets his heart worked on. So, in Tapestry.
Yeah, but what do you think, Amy? I mean, is he funny? Is he menacing? What
He's
is he?
He's completely funny in this episode. And I don't think that he would in any way, shape, or form allow anyone to get hurt too bad. And if they did, he would just bring them back and reset, you know, the time continuum. So
he brought Tasha back to life in the encounter at Far Point.
You beat me to it. I was just about to say something about it.
Yeah. So he can do that. But I mean, but then again, he brings them face to face with the Borg in season two, and 18 people die and never come back. So, you know, he causes some death.
Oh, those were red shirts.
Oh, come on, Amy. They mean should mean just as much to us as anybody else.
That's true. That's true. Well, I think in Q-Who that there was a purpose for that. And so I do think that there is a purpose in Cupid as well. And so I guess we can talk about it now because he is trying to tell Picard something. And that's what I like about Q is you look at each of the times that he is on the episode, and especially at Encounter at Farpoint, and then most especially, if I can say that, at All Good Things, where it's like, in All Good Things, Q is trying to push Picard, you know, to see beyond right now, you know, and that's why he did the three times and da-da-da. But in this one with Cupid, he's like, I'm trying to teach you, this is where you're vulnerable. And again, just looking at to yourself, and it's like, where is it that you can improve? Where are you vulnerable? And what can you do to protect yourself? And I just feel like Q is trying to tell Picard something, as he does in almost every episode. So what do you think? Do you remember that scene I'm talking about where he's like, you're vulnerable? And yeah. Vosh found it. And then she steps up and was like, no, he's not. This is what makes him a great guy type of thing. So I don't know. And is it, does love make you vulnerable and therefore susceptible to, you know, being overcome or losing your power?
It's interesting you mentioned that he's bringing some lessons to each one. It's almost like Q the teacher, like he's there to help teach a lesson or in some ways, you know, guide Picard to being a better human being.
The inappropriate teacher.
Well, and I guess now I sort of do that after my Q reading the Q books, and you have read them too. It's like, you know, Q, this is Q's little domain after reading the Q trilogy.
Which one, Q Continuum?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and that gives a good explanation, like that, for why Q has this special relationship with humans. So yeah, I could see that. And he's coming there. I mean, like in Q's own kind of inflated sense of ego way, he's coming there and saying, you helped me, how can I help you? And Picard's really grumpy about it. He's like, go away, get out of my chair.
You can leave.
But I mean, like because I know Picard's been annoyed by him before and all the stuff he's done, but if Picard were to step back and be like, wait a minute, this guy is trying to do something for us. He's never really offered that before. So maybe I should think about what I want. And when he can't, Q has to give him a really hard lesson. Like, this is making you vulnerable and I need you to realize that. And he does. So yeah, he's doing him a favor.
Yeah. And in going with that, and I can see why Picard doesn't, because Picard doesn't trust Q. And so you've got someone trying to give you a gift who you don't trust. Well, what is that gift going to entail? What are the strings are attached? Like, if I tell you I wanted something, would you really get it? You know, you don't want to say something that you truly want and then have that person just smash all over it. You know what I mean? So I can sort of see Picard doing that and saying, yeah, you're trying to give me a gift. No, thank you, because I don't trust you at all.
Yeah, and he's saying, and you know, from the very first time we see Q, there's good reason why Picard shouldn't trust him. Like at the same time, you know, just by saying the gift you can give me is by going away, he should know at some level that's not going to satisfy Q, or that's not what he's looking for, and he's just going to get mischievous and do something he doesn't want. I wonder what would have happened if Picard would have said, okay, you want to do something for me, then, you know, destroy the Borg for all time so we never have to worry about them. Would he have done that? I don't know.
No, Picard would not have said that.
Probably not.
No, because he would have sent Hugh back with that bug.
That hasn't happened yet.
I know, but I'm saying that's his character.
Okay.
He wouldn't have done that because he didn't do that.
Time is non-linear here on Earl Grey.
Okay, all right. True. Or he could have said something like, you know,
And Picard wouldn't destroy an entire species.
Okay. So, but what if he said something like liberate the Borg and return them to their previous lives? Or I don't know, something that could add to the world or the universe. He could have, but he was just kind of annoyed in the moment. But it kind of works because we get this fun Robin Hood adventure.
Oh, absolutely.
Fun Robin Hood adventure? I mean, some people didn't like it.
Well, I know not everybody likes it.
Seriously.
But there's so many funny moments in this episode.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, definitely one of my favorites is obviously when Geordi's trying to... Obviously, he's making, he's playing badly.
Very badly. It's like a lute or something like that.
Yes, yeah. A lute.
There you go. So he's like playing it, and it kills me in my ears. I'm like, oh,
it's terrible.
Don't do this to me. And then, of course, just like any other Star Trek fan or anyone would have came up and just smashed it.
Yeah, but then Worf like hands it back to him. I'm like, dude, that's hilarious. Yeah, why even apologize? You're not sorry.
And he didn't even protest. It's like, okay, yeah, I know I suck.
He's like, yeah, I'm terrible, and you're much more powerful, so I'll just accept that. Yeah, I love that.
Okay, so another funny moment, which you know I'm going to bring up, where Counselor Troy is shooting the arrow, and bam, right into Data. And he just like, she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. He's like, I'm functioning fine. That's okay.
No, what he says is, don't worry, Counselor. I believe your aim is improving.
Yes.
And I love that. Like, her aim was worse than hitting Data straight in the chest.
You know, so speaking of Troy, so when they were assaulting the whole entire castle and everything, so did you guys take a look at Beverly Crusher's face when she smashed that plant on that guy?
No.
Like, she was thoroughly enjoying
it.
Yes. And then she just smashed it, and you could see the thrill in her face.
Yep,
as she goes
off
camera.
Yeah.
Troy didn't even look like she looked, oh, I'm sorry. Like, she was about to say, I'm sorry. I'm like, well, that takes away from it. But, yeah, it's like she thoroughly enjoyed hitting that guy with the plant.
Yeah, Crusher crushed it. Bada boom.
Yeah.
And that's it for Amy. Don't forget to tip your waitress.
I'm here all night.
I kind of wish, though, that instead of, you know, hitting people with potted plants, that they really knew how to fight. But oh well.
Well, at least they had helmets on.
that's true. But I mean, I think they were kind of going all the way with the Robin Hood kind of story. And that's the kind of thing that a woman would do in a Robin Hood story, right? Probably. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe not. Well, am I not familiar enough with the original story? Amy's giving me like a really a glance.
No, I don't know.
But it's fun. You know what one of my favorite moments is in this episode? So at the beginning of the episode, Q has come to ask, you know, what Picard wants. And he says, you know, I would have taken my own life, but for you. And Picard says, we all make mistakes.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that so much. I almost fall out of my chair laughing every time I hear that, because there's a great Picard one-liner.
We all make mistakes.
Yeah, and that was right after, you know, Q had asked him if he wanted a big hug, and asked him, you know, don't stand there, say something. And Picard just says, get out of my chair. I just love their interaction, because Q irritates him. Picard comes back with some scathing line. It's so funny.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely a lot of funny moments.
Well, but Richard, how can we not mention probably the most famous funny moment of this episode?
Wait, how can we?
I am not a merry man?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, definitely. I love that.
So Worf.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's not really a merry man anyway. Well, when he's drinking with his other Klingon friends and all that, he is. But
he is, but not when you put him in some ridiculous costume.
Oh, yeah.
I think he looked good as Will Scarlet. No?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Very much so. He looked better than Riker, in my opinion.
Yeah, what did Riker have on? Was it just like some animal hide or something? What was he wearing?
Yeah, it looked like some kind of wolf pattern, I'm sure. Or wolf pattern. It was some kind of wolf fur. There you go, not pattern.
He looked like that he had gained 20 pounds. I don't know what. He just looked extra big, and maybe there was like some padding because he was supposed to be Little John, right? Who's a big guy. Yeah.
Right.
But Riker doesn't get to do much in the episode, does he?
No.
Well, he's also very tall. You know, he's probably like one out of the, he's probably the 1% that are even that tall anyway, especially in that time frame. Yeah. So I don't know, you know, malnutrition, you know, and all that. Amy, did you like Troy's outfit? I'm assuming you did.
Yeah, she looked really good in it for sure. Way better than the Goddess of Empathy.
Oh, I don't know. People would actually argue with you.
No
about that.
Way. I can't believe anyone would like her in that. She looked really good here.
Well,
in
then you
Cupid.
Can't believe me because I like her in that.
Troy herself tells that Goddess of Empathy to muzzle it and go away. So she doesn't like the outfit either, I think.
That's right.
Well, yeah.
But you know, there's one other moment. So when they're in 10 forward and Worf sees Vosh and he says, "Nice legs for a human." That's so funny.
Oh,
my goodness.
Gosh.
The way that Michael Dorn says stuff is he just has perfect timing, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
I mean, I wonder if he says that with Picard, because I mean, he does wear tights in his dress uniform. So, you know,
Captain, you have nice legs. For a human.
You'll see Klingons walking around that.
No, the Klingon dress uniform does not look like that early one with the tights.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little bit tight.
One thing, it's not really funny, but I like the interplay with Vosh and Q. And I think when Q realizes, so Vosh is supposed to be beheaded, right? Because she's not going to marry. And then come to find out, oh, she's going to marry the guy. What's his
Sir
name?
Guy?
Sir
Guy?
Sir Guy, yeah.
I so meant to do that, listeners.
Yep.
You know, and so, and Q's like, what? There's not going to be a beheading? And no, because Vosh is going to marry, and she's going to, and that's what I like about her, is she's going to do whatever it takes to, take care of herself. And that is awesome and something that I think we all should do. You got to take care of you. And even if someone thinks that they're playing you, you flip the script.
Yeah. I have to say, though, every time I see this, I think, would somebody really give a choice like marry me or get your head cut off? That just seems really odd. But
well, if you have absolute power like some of the lords did back in those days, yeah, I would assume so. I mean, in a sense, I guess Maid Marian would be like a trophy.
I mean, I guess if we think of like a historical precedence, you know, Henry VIII chopped off the heads of some of his wives because they didn't have children for him. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah.
No,
and that's
it was
what I was
because
thinking.
It was because they were getting he was getting daughters and not sons.
Oh, because he was getting daughters and not sons.
Edward the first was because Edward was the first son.
Yeah, that's pretty cold blooded. And
that's my freaking. Living in England, knowledge.
But yeah, I mean, that's something that actually happened like, 500 years ago. So, okay. All right.
I think there's coercion.
Yeah.
Well, so, you know, a question that Jennifer and I came up with when we were watching Vosh, you know, interact with Sir Guy, would someone like that stick out? I mean, I'm not saying, okay. Just a disclosure, I'm not saying women are stupid or anything like that or cunning or whatnot. I'm just saying, like a woman of the 24th century, being educated as she is, going back to the 14th century, would she draw a different kind of attention than a normal woman would do back then? Or you know, do you understand what I'm saying? Do you guys understand what I'm saying?
I kind of know where you're going, but I think in different periods of time, even when women haven't had as many, you know, rights or ways of doing things, there have been, you know, women who have been stronger resisted in certain ways. So I don't know. Would she have stood out? I don't know. I didn't live during that time. Haven't read too much about it. But I mean, I think that it's important when we think about what actually happened that not everyone's going to be the same and some people are going to be different, even if there's some suppression going on.
Well, and I think it stands out when Vosh sends her handmaiden to try and go and deliver this letter. You know, Vosh is like, you need to go deliver this. And the lady's like, no, it's too dark. I can't do that, you know, so that timid, you know. And I think that her character just would be like, well, this is what has to be done, whether she is in that time period or in the 24th century. I think she is who she is.
Yeah, but also the role that she has is probably someone that's higher in society than this handmaiden and can give out those kinds of orders and is used to people doing what she would want to. So I sometimes it can be like a difference in what's expected of different classes, you know?
Mm. Yeah. Or maybe that was typical for a noble woman. I don't know. I don't know if they actually got schooling or not.
It depended on the time period, I think.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So, all right. So, final thoughts, Mr. Justin. What'd you think?
Well, it was fun taking a look at this episode. You know, when we were coming up with this idea, I was like, please, I hope episode 200 is really good and it's not something god awful.
So there's nothing god awful in next gen.
No. But there's got to be okay. Let me look at the list. Oh, no, that's season one, dude.
Oh, no. You mean like in season four something that's awful? I'm sure we could name something. I know you're a fan of everything. That's fine.
We've done Unsung, and so every episode deserves a little love.
Even Aquiel.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Or it could be, I mean, looking at some of these episodes, I mean, yeah, I guess it landed really well in the season. So I guess. Yeah, if it was like there was an episode in season three or something like that, I think we'd all beg to differ that there might be some not so great episodes. But like, how awesome would it have been if it landed on Darmok?
Oh, now we're going to play the what if game.
I'm just saying.
What if the original series went for five seasons and the 200th one was... But anyway, it was a really fun episode. I'm glad that we talked about it. I always enjoy watching it. It's a really fun, you know, Q episode. Vosh is, I think, more sympathetic, a better character in this episode. There's some funny lines. There's some great stuff to think about. It's a nice period piece. I mean, there's all this stuff that comes together in it that works really well. So I really enjoyed this, and it's just a really fun episode that, I'm glad we got a chance to talk about.
Amy?
Well, at the time we're recording, this is a school day for me. So in preparation, I wanted to watch the video, but I didn't have any time. So during my prep period, I just put it up on the big screen. I projected it on the screen and had the whole sound system going.
So it was just you and it, what, in a classroom watching it on a big screen?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, through the speaker system, because we have speaker systems, you know, at my school. And so, but it was funny because, you know, people come in and out. I, of course, had my door
closed.
Oh,
there were people coming in?
Yeah.
So did you have, like, the speakers up, like, really loud or something like that?
A little bit, because I, of course, it's Star Trek. And so it was funny because that's not your typical Star Trek environment. They're out here in the forest in these weird costumes. And so people would come in and they're like, well, what are you? Is that Star Trek? And I was like, yeah, that's Star Trek. So they're like, well, what are they doing? And so I got to explain a couple of times, you know, to people what the episode was and why it's so weird and not your typical, you know, Star Trek Next Generation episode. And so for that, I just think it's a great episode. It is so different. You can say Cupid, and anyone who knows anything about TNG knows exactly what it is. That's not something, it's not an episode that people are going to forget, you know, because even me, and I love TNG, like you say an episode and I'm like, oh, now which one was that? You know, it just, this one is very memorable and it's got so much good humor. You can see the characters really interacting one with another, having fun. I really enjoy this episode and I'm glad that it is 200 and that we get to talk about it for 200th episode of Earl Grey.
So since we're talking about our days that we're recording, I'm actually suffering from a hangover from my beer fest that yesterday. But what? But anyway, no. But like, definitely. Yeah, this episode. I mean, watching it back when I watched it, it was a great episode. I thought it was fun, exciting, and it was a great adventure. And you know, like I said, I mean, it's not one of those ones I just pop in because I want to, but. Since we were talking about it and watched it again, and it's like, it's a very fun episode. You know, there were a couple of things that I forgot. Some of the jokes that just made me laugh again. And it's definitely one of those fun ones that you can definitely, experience. We can definitely call back to this episode quite a bit because there's a lot of those one-liners that are funny that are just great. So definitely... good episode.
Yeah, and I mean, how many hundreds of times have you seen a meme with Worf saying, "I am not a merry man"? A lot, exactly. Right?
It's one of my go-tos.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, it has been so much fun talking about Cupid in the 200th episode of Earl Grey, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm. The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
For an opening episode to get that relationship, like you could see that crew really had been working together for 7 years, which is so wow. Not normal for a launch, for a first episode, right? Because you've got the odds, but they seemed to have working forever together. The camaraderie that they had, the trust that they have with each other.
To the journey!
And then, you know, they're all up on the bridge and everyone's like, oh, what's B'Elanna doing with her day off? And Tom's like, oh, she's binge-watching Bill Nye. She's been there, you know, in her PJs since 8 o'clock this morning.
I can picture she's been watching Bill Nye all day. Tom comes home and she says to Tom, you know, Tom, have you ever thought about wearing a bow tie?
But if he's on the bridge and says all that, would Captain Janeway know who Bill Nye the Science Guy is?
Yeah. It's Janeway.
The 602 Club.
So I graduated from high school in 1984. So this film came out in my, sophomore year in high school? So that was like prime formative years for me. This is, you know, this and Mad Max were the R-rated movies that me and all of my friends wanted to go see.
Meta Treks.
It knows to point that out and say, that's red. You know, it will correctly identify the red shirt as red, but really perceives it like we perceive blue.
I knew Kirk should have wore his green tunic when he went to fight the Gorn.
Yeah, it would have made all the difference.
It would have made all the difference.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show. And there are many ways for you to do that. The best place is to join the larger conversation on the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM.
So Justin, where can people contact you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. Currently tweeting out my season 3 TNG rewatch. And you can also find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. Richard, where can people find you?
Well, people can find me not galloping in Sherwood Forest right now, but I am also on Facebook. I pop in here and there on the Babel Conference. And also, I am on Twitter, and my handle is xransom. And just to let you guys know, I turned my notifications back on, so now I'll start responding faster.
Very good, Richard. All right. Very good.
So I've actually been tweeting more about the Orville and other things, so we'll see if we can get that. So, Amy, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me here on the network. I am co-hosting on The Edge, and I co-host with Aaron Harvey, Michael Schindler, and Brandon Shea Mutella. I do a little mini show called Postcards from The Edge, where we talk nothing but fan response. So I'm really enjoying that and hearing what each of you who's on the Babel Conference or Twitter get to think about the newest Star Trek discovery. I am also on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, but my favorite place is on the Babel Conference. Now, guys, we have a lot going on here at Trek FM, and it takes a little bit of money to produce and to host and to distribute these shows each month. And if you would like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, please consider becoming a patron of the network at Patreon. That's, you can visit patreon.com/trekfm, patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. There's some perks, and you can donate at any level that you would like. Perks include early access and exclusive content, producer credits, and so much more. And in fact, that's where I started on the network, was on the Patrons Roundtable. And Justin, you started there too?
I started there as well. My very first podcasting experience was on the Patrons Roundtable last year. It's an amazing thing to take part in. And I hope that more people, you know, donate at the level to be able to be a part of that. It's a really great experience.
Yeah, if you're interested to get more involved in the network, that's a great way to get your foot in the door and to talk to everyone who's there on the roundtables. It's really a lot of fun. So you can do that there. And we have, at the $25 level, associate producers. And we have some amazing associate producers. And that would be Norman Lau, Justin Ozer, and Michael Huter. Thank you so much for supporting Earl Grey. And please consider donating at patreon.com.
So, join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
Great joy and gratitude.
We all make mistakes.
Nice legs for a human.